Hi, I'm Stephanie. I'm the host of the Real People, Real Business show. And normally we would be interviewing amazing business owners and hearing their stories and synthesizing some of the great experiences and lessons that they've learned along the way. But today it is International Women's Day. And while that can be a little bit like a Hallmark holiday, I wanted to sit back and reflect a little bit on what that meant to me. And what I'm going to read you today is a personal essay that I wrote a few years ago. And it kind of came out during a writing workshop. And I realized that my own journey has been one of recognizing and accepting my own femininity and what it means to be a woman. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy the vulnerability and some of the lessons that came out of it. And I would encourage you to reach out and tell me more about what being a woman or femininity means to you, or being around women and being influenced by women in your life and celebrating that. So without further ado, here we go. And thank you for listening.
We sat huddled in the steamy cafe, poised for battle. Our nervous energy was a thick blanket over our drenched winter coats. We were going in for the kill, and the anticipation was so thick that if you licked your lips, you could almost taste victory. We were warriors, and we were in this together, to the death, trusting each other, each playing its vital role in an intricate, choreographed advance. I couldn't wait. I loved this part. I loved the game and the nuance. I knew what to say at the right time, how to lighten the room, how to suggest an intimate, and when to direct. It was a dance, an energy exchange. It was an opportunity to orchestrate a shared experience and to create connection, if we were smart enough to watch and respond to the things that were not only said but felt. And that's when we would win. Stephanie, I don't want you to say anything in this meeting today. You haven't learned how to talk to customers yet. The record scratches to a sudden halt. What? Did I hear him correctly? Was this a joke? I blinked as if to clear the foggy windshield through which I was staring and cocked my head at him as if I didn't understand, because I didn't. I was part of this team. I knew the dance. I'd been doing this for a decade. But he'd cut off my legs so I could only sit and watch, and this made me enraged and confused and ashamed and overcome by the desire to flee. He would be the first in a long line of men who would tell me I didn't behave like I should, that would tell me I shouldn't be so familiar or so talkative or so transparent. In the Holy Bible of business, you were supposed to be tough and secretive and ready for battle. There was no room for my brand of business. And yet, I never failed to succeed, to close the deal, to garner raving fans and repeat customers, to march the project team across the finish line on time, on budget, and on the cusp of something transformational. But they never seemed to connect the dots. I broke the rules, but somehow it worked, and maybe they were the ones who should have been confused. And so I kept trying to be like them, to fit the mold, to acquiesce, to become a vision of a steely-eyed warrior with dollar signs in my eyes who scoffed at emotion and ate the week for breakfast. When I was young, my dad used to joke about being left out, the only male in a house full of women. Even our cats were girls. He meant nothing by it, and he loved us dearly, but I took it to heart. Back then in the 70s, we were still reading books where fathers and sons formed tight bonds by playing ball together and fixing cars in greasy brown coveralls. My dad didn't play ball and wasn't all that excited when he had to fix the car. But somehow, I still imagined he wished he could do more than build me houses for my Barbie dolls. So I made it my mission to be as much of a boy as I could, without strange glances from the neighbors and poisonous whispers as I walked by. I asked for toy cars and wood-burning kits instead of Cabbage Patch Kids and Rainbow Bright. I wore tracksuits and muscle shirts and only occasionally a dress when it would be social suicide not to. Every now and then, I'd sneak back to my Barbies and dreamily decorate their three-story penthouse, wondering eagerly about one day I'd get to decorate my own. By the time I was an eye-rolling teenager, I'd become so entrenched in my mission, I'd started viewing anything feminine as weak, vulnerable, hysterical, and superficial. Being one of the boys was my trademark and my identity. I was proud to have risen above and been saved from walking that path of the annoying, dramatic female. I was solitary. Without friends, no, I had plenty of those. I was popular with most of my peers and outgoing, friendly, and funny. Sometimes I even wore the right clothes. I just didn't want to be part of a pack of girls, those blood-sucking emotional vampires that would turn on you the minute you didn't use enough hairspray to elevate your bangs. I was happy on my own, until I wasn't. In 11th grade, I decided to give girls a second chance and explore the possibility of belonging to a tribe. By some good fortune, I found one shortly into the school year. For 10 months, we existed better together than apart. We giggled over boys, went shopping for clothes I'm too embarrassed to admit to wearing, and generally all got along. And I felt part of something, protected. I had membership and I belonged. Maybe I'd been wrong about them after all. When summer came around, I had a boyfriend and a job, and my tribe was less a part of my plans than I would have liked. But I was tired from work and had obligations. I missed my gang, but there wasn't much that could be done. We were growing up and exploring our lives, becoming young adults and old kids. So I was thrilled when they invited me out for a big group dinner to celebrate my birthday. When that muggy night in July rolled around, I dressed in my best and drove to the house of one of the lead girls, where they'd asked me to meet before the dinner. Shortly after arriving, I knew this wasn't going to be the celebration I'd hoped for. Only two girls were there, my best friend and the ringleader. It became obvious that they scripted the evening to include only stories they would know and inside jokes. I was intentionally eliminated from any conversation to them. And when they finally invited me into their bedroom and closed the door, the hair on my neck stuck straight up in anticipation, anxiety, and a throbbing conscious warning. Have you missed us? Well, of course I had. There's no birthday dinner tonight. We just brought you here to tell you that we're pissed at you for abandoning us. Oh, this was what was happening. Of course. I stood up quietly and left, not giving them the opportunity to hurl any more daggers. Not allowing them their victory, hoping to leave them with even the slightest sliver of remorse for their shameful behavior. The next day, I applied to switch schools so I could attend my last year without any reminder of the horrors that girls, women, were capable of. I could retreat into my shell, get through the year, and hopefully, with any luck, never have to deal with women again. Women personified hurt and judgment. Risk and pain. Men were safe, transparent, and best of all, unemotional. I stormed into my graduate year with a big battering ram in front of me, picking fights with girls that were bullies or hurtful or even judgmental of the people who didn't deserve it. Throwing caution to the wind and doing whatever the hell I wanted, I was a streak of misery to all who crossed my path. I was committed to my anger, my freedom, and my non-femininity. The world around me was insignificant and childish, petty and poison, and for all I cared, it could crumble into a gaping abyss and I would never miss a beat. What I hadn't counted on was that year being one of discovery and growth, finding my creative voice. My masculine voice told me to opt for the practical, stable, sure thing classes that would land me into the university of my choice and direct me towards a career that would set me up for security, stability, and God willing, good pay. Extra points if it was rational, logical, and emotionless. I ended the year graduating with scholarships in theater and creative writing. The first time I let myself lead with my heart and wondered why it had been so much easier. My husband and I met for breakfast the morning after we split. It had been sudden and it was my fault. We were irrecoverably broken, undone at my hand. We sat in the restaurant of the hotel where I had fled, neither of us able to choke down our lukewarm eggs and neglected toast. We were both wrecked, one visibly and one not. He said to me through his open pain, "I wish I could be as calm and collected as you are about this." And for the first time in my life, that didn't make me proud. It was the first time I started wondering if there was something very wrong. More wrong than a mistake I had made or the words I had used. Much more wrong than a fleeting, confused emotion. There was something wrong in the deep canyons of my spirit, and its decay was spreading. My therapist later said to me, "You can't think your way out of this. You're going to have to learn how to use your heart and feel." She might as well have told me I had to solve world hunger because I had no clue where to start or what that even meant. I just knew there was nothing left in this flimsy shell, that I had retreated too far and the rescue effort was going to be a war of attrition. When my kids had been born, the phenomenon of having a little thing coming out of my body was too much, was too everything. I never felt the overwhelming lightning sparks that every mother is supposed to feel. I felt responsible, protective. But this little human was unknown to me and illogical and demanding and needy. I fell into a life of keeping the fires out, bouncing from my brand new business to my brand new baby to the deep, heavy, dark nights where I couldn't get the bearings beneath fatigue, frustration, and fear. The only solution was to shut everything down, shut down the feelings, shut down the dialogue, shut down the love, shut down anything that was a risk, and just keep the wheels turning, keep everyone safe and fed. Let someone else be responsible for happy. This went on for years until I couldn't make sense of myself anymore. I was just getting by, but only just. I was checking the boxes and keeping the lights on. I was feeling nothing and running fast towards anything that felt like a desperate last chance at movement in my heart. But it was too late. It was too wrong. I broke everything and I crumbled. As they say, rock bottom is a great place to grow from. But I hung out there for a while, walking in circles, thinking, crying, staring at the walls, because that felt infinitely better than trying to save my own life. I hadn't just lost my family, I'd lost myself. Then slowly, brick by brick, I started to climb back up. I knew the path out wasn't going to look like the one that got me in. I had to move towards everything and anything that made me feel something again. I had to listen to my body, not my mind. I had to trust myself and trust others, neither of which I'd been accustomed to. I started filling my life with things that had always been on my shit list: spirituality, alternative medicine, energy healing, yoga, makeup, dance, women. And wouldn't you know it, it was women who saved my life. Women who gave me the courage to start being feminine. Women who helped me see that all of the things that felt easy were the things that gave me power. I felt like, for once, the pieces were making a whole. After 20 years in the technology sector, an industry that couldn't be more acutely masculine, I decided to trust my instincts and change directions. I started building a business based on my own intuition. Within months, I was surrounded entirely by women. And if I tried for even a second to go back to my anti-feminine roots, I would feel laughably untethered and like a vicious fake. Women didn't want to hear hardball talk. They didn't want to focus on speed, money, and winning. They responded when I connected and when I was vulnerable. They responded when I was compassionate and talked about how they felt rather than what they did. And you know what? It was easy. It was easy because it was right. It was instinctive. As my femininity grew, so did the rest of my life. I stopped pushing everyone away. I wanted to be around women. I created deep, loyal, passionately protective relationships with my female friends. I created connection with my kids. I quit the stories about how they preferred their dad over me. I gave myself permission to be their mom and to be loved by them. We rebuilt our family. Though we remain separated, we operate as a normal family unit. We let go of past grievances, and I let myself just be me, feminine, masculine, whatever came out. I started to love being a woman, I started vocally rejecting anyone who challenged my feminine power. I started advocating for leading with your heart. I learned that what I thought made me weak was actually the most powerful thing I possessed. And while I still have a way to go, and arguably will always be learning, I can say without hesitation that today I am no longer reluctantly feminine.